Welcome. If you haven't been before, welcome for the first time to this is where Analog Cycles used to have their bike shop.
You're listening to Happy Vermont, a podcast about places you love in the Green Mountain State. I'm Erica Housekeeper. In March, I visited Pulteney for the fifth season ride. This is a quirky mud season excursion where cyclists pedal around to sugar houses in town. We all expected a muddy ride through this scenic Rutland County town, but instead Mother Nature dumped close to 2 feet of snow on the day of the ride. The race went on, but with fewer riders. I was one of them. I was a little out of my element since I don't really ride in races, and I've never biked in that much snow. But the ride was goofy and fun, and I met some really wonderful people who live in Pulteney. Over the weekend, someone described Pulteney to me as this forgotten little corner of Vermont. The town is located near the New York state line. It's home to Lake St. Catherine, the Pulteney River, Slate Valley Trails, small businesses, sugar houses, and miles of beautiful dirt roads. Pulteney was once part of a booming slate industry before the industry collapsed in the Great Depression. And in 2019, Green Mountain College, located in the heart of town, closed its doors. But that's not the whole story about Pulteney. There's great things happening here. Younger people are relocating or moving back home to Pulteney. They're reopening a local pub, buying a bookstore, or starting a bike shop. Recently, the local Chamber of Commerce nearly dissolved until these group of passionate community members rallied to keep it going. James Johnson owns Analog Cycles on Main Street, and he organized the fifth season race. He lives off the grid in a yurt on land once owned by his grandmother. Near the yurt is a sugar house that was built in the 1980s, which served as race headquarters. In this episode, I talked to James, as well as other people I met, Whitney, Tim, and Courtney, about life in Pulteney. Here's James to start us off.
And we had 136 riders signed up, and I think total maybe 35 showed up, something along those lines. But everyone that did come said they're coming back. They had a great time. The best possible outcome considering the incredibly adverse conditions. And I say adverse, and I don't mean like, I don't think it was actually really dangerous out per se, but it is hard to just navigate this amount of snowfall. It's a lot of snow. It's hard to ride a bike in it. It's hard to drive a car in it. And I don't think it was actually per se very dangerous, but it was slow going, difficult, logistically hard to get around. Normally we have a little bit of snow for this event. Last year we had snow flurries, some rain, some sleet, but to have this volume of snow, it was never billed as a fat bike ride. It was never billed as a ride where you need a specific bike, and suddenly to have it turn into that ride at the last possible minute, just throw us a big old wrench and everything. But I think it also weeds folks out, and not that we were like trying to get rid of people, but it makes it so that the people that come out really are committed to making the ride fun for themselves and fun for other people. So everyone just came in with this freaking awesome spirit, I think. And all the sugar houses were extra stoked to see us because nobody else came out today. So we got like extended tours, and we, they were just really grateful that we bothered to show up because nobody else bothered to show up. So I don't know. To me, it's like a super Vermont-y experience in the best, most ridiculous way possible.
It got me thinking about Pulteney's resilience. This is a resilient town. It's been through a lot. And the bike ride was sort of like it sort of symbolized some of that. Did that feel that way to you today?
I totally understand what you're saying. And I think it's great that you're reading it into it that way. And I see that resilience all the time. And so to me, it's just what the community is. And I don't mean that to say that I don't credit it or anything like that, but rather I see it get knocked down and then pick itself back up again and again and again. And it's, certainly part of why I live here. It's like this sort of scrappy little funky place. And that's, like Stowe doesn't struggle or Manchester doesn't struggle. Like to see these people who are living under adverse conditions all the time still be this generous and nice. And I think it's incredible. I think you often get the most sort of gracious behavior from people who have the least. And I think you certainly see that in Pulteney.
So my grandmother was born in Pulteney in the 20s. I can't remember off the top of my head the year, but she was born here in the 20s. And toward the end of her life, I asked her about the Great Depression and Pulteney and Vermont. And she said that basically no one knew it was happening because everyone was just poor all the time, which I thought was just interesting. And Pulteney today is still one of the more poor areas in Vermont. I think the statistic is something like 67% of the population is under the poverty line, which is pretty bad. But anyway, my grandmother, when she was a kid, she contracted tuberculosis. And at the time, there was no great cure for that. And so the cure at the time was for her to sleep out on the porch of her house and be covered in wet wool blankets during the winter. And that was how she was going to get cured. And it worked, I guess. She lived and became my grandmother, obviously, years later. But that was a pretty wild story of Vermont. I don't know.
Hardiness
and maybe foolhardiness. So I just thought it blew my mind that she lived through that. So she's pretty tough cookie. And then my grandfather was born in Windsor, Vermont, spent his summers in Glover, Vermont, eventually came to school down at Green Mountain College. That's where he met my grandmother. And then he went off to fight in the Second World War, and they got married sometime during the war. And then shortly thereafter had my mom. And so that was in the early 50s. And at that point, my grandfather was the guidance counselor at the local high school and also the football coach. And actually the guy who owns the building that we're sitting in, who's, I don't know, 88 now or 90, my grandfather was his football coach, which is kind of wild. small town.
Yeah. So many connections.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And your mom was born here, but she grew up elsewhere?
Yep. So my mom was born here and lived here until maybe she was seven or so. And then they moved to Maryland. The whole family moved to Maryland, I think basically because of wages were way higher to do the same work. And so that's how they sort of exited Vermont, but really maintained connections here and visited every single year, sometimes multiple times a year. And eventually in the 70s, bought a little cabin on Lake St. Catherine. And that's where I spent all my summers as a kid, was at that cabin, which is not in my family anymore. But that was my 25 years of my young life was spent there.
Right. So Vermont from an early age was part of your life.
Yeah. And it also seemed like a second home because we had a lot of relatives here and friends. And it never felt like a foreign place that I was visiting. It was like, it was a quarter of my life. It was a large portion of my life, even though it was just summers. So it seemed very natural to move here. It wasn't like a scary thing. Like if you moved here from Seattle or something like that, I already knew people. It was very, very normal to move here, it seemed like.
When did you move here?
Moved here 6 years ago.
From Maryland.
From Maryland. Yep. Yep. Moved from a relatively normal life where I had a house with a carport and lived in a normal city kind of environment. And then I decided that to move here and make everything happen, I needed to, for some reason, live in a yurt off the grid and do everything the hardest, stupidest way possible. So that's what I've been doing for the past 6 years, is trying to run a bike shop and live in a tent.
What does living off the grid mean?
So truly living off the grid would mean no wires going to your house at all, and no municipal water lines, this at least is my interpretation of it. Basically, you're not relying, if something in the system goes down, you're fine because you're providing everything that you need, whether it's your own electricity, your own water, your own heat. So right now, the only thing that I eventually had to sort of break with on that is I eventually got internet to run my business, which is highly online. I still don't have running water. I get my water out of a stream, or I melt snow, and I have a composting toilet, and we use wood heat, and have a very small solar array, not even big enough to run like our fridge or anything like that. It's just enough to run an internet router and turn the radio on occasionally, but it's really about it.
That's about it. And you decided to live off the grid as you started your bike brand and your bike shop, right?
Correct. And I didn't do it, I mean, to just be crazy or hardcore or anything like that. I did it to save money. I did it because I knew that I figured I could just start a bike shop and probably live in a normal house and afford to do that. But to start my own bike brand, I knew would be incredibly expensive to do. And it would lose money for years to do that. And that the only way that was going to be doable without having any financial backing from anybody was to cut my living expenses to the absolute bare minimum. So before my grandmother passed, she used to have a sugar bush that she co-owned with my uncle. And when he passed, she was the sole owner of it. And she sold it to me for a couple bucks. And on that sugar bush was already a sugar house. And I knew that I could put a small bike shop in that sugar house, and that all I'd have to pay would be property taxes for the land. So my startup costs would be incredibly low. So I stuck the yurt on the same property that the sugar house is on. And that's how I was able to just funnel all of my extra money into the business rather than existing. You know, just owning a house is expensive, as everyone who's owned a house knows. It's incredibly expensive. And to cut that out, just massive savings and money.
That's so Vermont, starting a bike shop in a sugar house.
Then that was completely off the grid. The entire time it was in the sugar house, we didn't have internet in there. There was nothing in there. We would go to the library to use the internet, fulfill orders, stuff like that. As far as I know, it was the first or maybe only off the grid bike shop in the country. Maybe there's other ones now, but at the time it was the only one out there.
Was it open to the public?
Yeah.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We were open 4 days a week and really immediately had walk-in traffic. I mean, just immediately there was interest because it was unique. There's, again, no other off-the-grid bike shop, no bike shops in sugar houses, no bike shops in the woods, you know, right off a dirt road. So everything about it, I think, was like destination shop. I started the fifth season ride the first full winter I was here. And at that point, the college was still around. So we just got some college kids and a couple local riders to just very casually ride around to different sugar shacks during Pulteney Maple Fest. And so we just rode around sort of unannounced because the ride was very small. It was very casual. We just showed up at these sugar houses and realized it was a much bigger deal. There's a lot more attendance. There's a lot of people at these sugar houses and they were eating cool food and like eating like maple cotton candy or hot dogs boiled in maple sap. And it was just kind of this very wonderful community event where there wasn't a centralized event. Like the 4th of July is the parade, right? And sort of the festivities downtown. This was decentralized. It happened all over the countryside and happened in these little sugar shacks. And it was really cool. I think it's the coolest event of the year, honestly, apropos, not even including like that we're involved in it somehow. I just think it's a cool concept. And I said, geez, I got to like make this a bigger thing. And people will be interested in riding their bikes to this. This should just become a bigger event. And so over the years, it became a little bit bigger. And eventually we added a race component. So there's a casual ride, which still happens. And then there's also a race. And the race is sort of like a scavenger hunt where you go around to these different sugar houses and you have to eat different confections or drink maple syrup or do sort of like food related challenges, I guess. You have a piece of paper that if you go to the sugar house has to sign it after they've seen you consume whatever the thing is that you're going to have to eat. You have to eat all this food. And so you're trying to like ride your bike, but you're eating all this sugar and it's like a kind of a mess. And the rule is that you can race in between the sugar houses. But once you get to the sugar house and you get off your bike, you have to like walk at a normal pace. You have to just become a part of the Maple Fest. Like, and you can go as fast as you want when you get back on your bike, but you have to be really chill and casual in the sugar houses so that that no one else's experience is negatively altered by the presence of the cyclists coming through there.
So Maple Fest in Pulteney, that's been around.
I mean, I joke that it's been around for 433 years, but I don't actually know how long it's been around. It's one of those events that seems like it's been going on forever, but it could have maybe started in the 80s. I'm actually not sure of how long it's been around.
Did it ever taper off or anything like that and come back or?
Well, so this past year, unfortunately, the Chamber of Commerce was just really struggling to fill its roster. So they need a certain amount of people to doing business is the wrong word, but to be a chamber, you need members. And they had nobody. And so the chamber historically runs the Maple Fest. And so I just kind of freaked out. I was like, man, this can't go away. You know, this is too important to the community. It's important to my bike shop. And so I went to the chamber and I just said, hey, if you folks can't do it this year, because you're undergoing this sort of trauma, I'll do it. And I enlisted a couple of local allies to do that. And they said, okay, here you go. Here's the keys, essentially. And just handed over the event to myself. And eventually it became a bigger effort. The Rotary's involved. The Pulteney Downtown Revitalization Committee is involved. Other local volunteers are involved. The Pulteney Pub across the street. There's the list goes on. It became sort of a rallying cry, like, don't let, you know, Maple Fest go away. And it's going to be actually bigger than it's ever been this upcoming year because all these people became interested in it. But luckily, out of sort of my attending the chamber meeting, we brainstormed that the way to save the chamber was just to bribe some folks with some beers. So we had a little party at the bike shop and said, hey, you know, anyone who's interested in maybe joining the chamber, come to this social happy hour thing. And out of that event, which was a couple weeks ago, enough people showed up and volunteered to become part of the chamber that the chamber, which was literally one day away from becoming defunct, was saved overnight. All it took were some beers and wine and cheese. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
If you were to look at the census data for Pulteney over the past 150 years, really its population was pretty stable until manufacturing started to go away. And about 8 years ago, some folks came in who were really interested in building mountain bike trails in the area. And they had the resources to do that. And they purchased a lot of really inexpensive land, because it used to be to live in Pulteney, no one wanted to live here. So land and housing, everything was like just essentially dirt cheap. And so they purchased, you know, a few hundred acres, had a little bit of trails built there. And then they said, we want to build more. Then they sort of slowly purchased more and more land, paid professional trail builders to build on this land, whereas most trail systems in Vermont and everywhere are built by volunteers. This was like all like very well built, very sustainably built trails.
This is Slate Valley Trails?
So that became, this effort became Slate Valley Trails. And Slate Valley Trails now admins all those trails, all that property. They don't own it. The landowners still own it. But it became this huge thing. It's 50 miles of single track now, and it's going to grow even more over time. And it's become this really big draw to the area. But when I moved here, that was in its infancy. There was a handful of trails. But now that's like, you know, thousands of trail riders a year come here and stay in local Airbnbs or at the state park or whatever. But when I moved here, I was like, geez, I'm going to have to like start a trail organization and start building trails. But it turned out like the momentum was already in place, and the money crucially was already in place, and it was being done to a really high standard. And that combined with just how beautiful this area is, I was able to convince a few folks to start moving up. And then coronavirus hit and everyone wanted to get the heck out of New York City or Boston or wherever they were living. And suddenly, just like the rest of Vermont, housing went through the roof. There was nothing available for sale anymore. A house might sit for like 3 years before a nice house on the market, and everything was gone all of a sudden. And that has not changed. Like, housing's still expensive. It's super scarce. But there are still more people moving here to recreate now, which is great. They're not moving here to exploit it or log a bunch of stuff or whatever. They're moving here to ride bikes and hike and swim and all that, cross-country ski, all that great stuff.
Yeah. So there's been a shift.
A huge shift. And it is palpable everywhere. If you go into a hardware store, people talk about the trails. And it's not just young people talking about it. The hunters like them because they can more easily get back into the woods and they can more easily remove a deer on a piece of single track. There's like a symbiotic relationship with the hunters in the area. And so like the people who I thought maybe there'd be bad pushback from, like the call them the good old boys, generally are pretty on board. I mean, there's outliers, right? But the general sentiment is these trails are good for the town. It's positive economic development. Young people moving to town is a positive thing. There's a good feeling in the air in general about cycling in the area, which I think is great. Yeah, because I think and the older a community gets, maybe the harder it is for them to accept change. But here it's been enough influential people have embraced it that it has become woven into the fabric of their existence, I think, and in the best way possible.
Right. And, you know, you had the closing of Green Mountain College and you know, losing the young people through the college.
Yeah, but the town just lost it when the college went under. But what they, so this is sort of where being a historian maybe comes in. I mean, not that I'm a real historian, but being a student of history comes in. The college had been out of business three other times in the past. The people had hung all of their hopes and dreams on the college's existence, but had forgotten that this has happened before. It's gone under and it's been out for, you know, for years and then been reestablished as something else. And it's just like a cycle the Green Mountain College campus has gone through. It started as the Troy Academy. And I would stand up at meetings and say, how many people here know that this has happened before? Like, this isn't the end. Like, this is just a time of like a fallow time, and there'll be a time of rebirth. I think the college closing and the trails coming in, the trails, I think, have brought in far more money than the college ever did. Honestly, it's brought in more young people than the college did. The college really was run in a way to keep money on campus. So kids didn't live off campus. They didn't buy food off campus. They didn't go out to eat downtown. It was like a sort of a cloistered environment, which is fine, but it didn't actually, outside of the faculty, didn't really impact the town. So when it dissolved, I don't think that there was like a major blip in the Pulteney economic landscape. Everyone thought that it would fall apart, but it didn't. Nothing happened. Like, literally nothing happened. I think
that's good.
Yeah. So, and then the trails coming in, just, I think this is the first time ever we're seeing in the past 25 years, the amount of new businesses opening, staying in business, doing innovative stuff, young people moving in. This, there's like a real upward trend that's happening right now.
Why do you think that is with Pulteney? Like, how, besides the trails, like, you know, a lot of towns, some towns just can't get a break for a variety of reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what is it about Pulteney that kind of draws people? I mean, yeah, there's trails, but like, why live here?
Well, I think, you know, living in Pulteney is, I think it's cool for a variety of reasons. It's cool because it's not cool. And coming from a city environment, you know, everyone sort of has a certain way they have to dress. There's a certain expectation. And people here can just sort of be people. And sometimes that's kind of funny, like how slovenly they can be, but in general, like, no one's trying to impress anybody here. So there's like a relaxed, it's a relaxed environment just to walk around in, like a kind of a judgment-free zone. And because of the college, it has always trended, I'd say, like, much more liberal than your average small community town that doesn't have a college because of the professors and the students and all that. And it was like a environmental school. What's cool about this place is that a lot of places have good mountain biking. And a lot of places have, say, a lake or gravel roads or a river. But very, very few places have all four of those. And we have all of those. And we have a rail trail. And we have actually a really good little pub downtown. And to have all that and have it be relatively affordable, it's not like Stowe pricing or Burlington pricing or whatever. It's not congested. It's not busy. All of that, I think, is really unique in Vermont or even in the country. Like, to have all of that stuff in one zone. There's backcountry cross-country skiing when there's snow. I mean, there's just, there's, the list sort of goes on. And again, a lot of places have one or two of those, but to have all four or five or six of those things in one spot, it's like a sleeper destination. And the people who know, and the people who don't, hopefully won't find out. Don't publish this. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. Whitney Van Buren grew up in Pulteney. She's the owner of the Pulteney Pub on Main Street. On the morning of the fifth season ride, Whitney showed up to race headquarters with egg and bacon sandwiches she had made at the restaurant. I caught up with her the following morning at a pop-up coffee shop in town. Here's Whitney talking about growing up in Pulteney and her take on its small-town culture.
Growing up in a small town and having a lot of family in the area, it's an interesting experience because everyone knows everyone and is familiar, and it was a very, like, comforting feeling at times, very frustrating other times, but it's very a tight-knit community, and it was a fantastic place to grow up and to be able to be out and about with neighbors and friends and be involved and feel recognized and welcome and just, like, looked after, cared for. I think that's a pretty common feeling here. So Green Mountain College closed up, I can't even remember the exact year, a few years ago, and it definitely was a focal point of the town and the community. And it was, I think, alarming for a lot of locals at first just to see it shutter. You know, I think growing up in the community and understanding what it provided this area, it's an understandable reaction. But as you get outside of Pulteney, there's this sort of perception that the town kind of completely died when the college closed. And that's really not the case. There's so many businesses that continue to thrive. And there's such a strong community here made up of people even that have graduated from the college and stayed in the area, right? It has such a huge impact, but the town still continues to thrive and is moving forward. And there's a lot of new businesses opening in the area and a lot of exciting young energy.
Tim Farrell grew up in New Jersey and lived in Burlington, Vermont before relocating to Pulteney, where he now lives with his partner Maggie and their young son. Tim loves to bike, and he took the most beautiful photos of the fifth season ride. I chatted with him after the race to learn about what he loves about this place. Here's Tim.
We really loved Burlington. It was initially a place that we saw ourselves spending a lot of time. It sort of was checking all of the boxes that we wanted, you know, great amenities, great community, great family life. But we basically got priced out. Like, when we were looking for houses, and we're both, my partner and I, from New Jersey, and we were looking for houses in Burlington and Chittenden County, and the price was like the same as we were seeing in New Jersey, and we just couldn't afford it. And also, my partner was looking for a job as a midwife, and she found a job across the border in New York. And so we started looking in this region. We wanted to stay in Vermont. That was really important to us, but we wanted to be within commuting distance for her. And we somehow found Pulteney. And at the time that we moved here, it was maybe a bit of a shot in the dark because the college had just closed and it wasn't really clear like what direction the town was going. But since having moved here, it really does feel like there's been good traction in the direction of outdoor recreation.
Tell me what you love most about Pulteney.
I love how quiet it is in the literal sense, I think. Like, I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and I mean, I love like the adrenaline of like being in a city, and I will always like cherish time like visiting any type of city. I love just like that energy, but I think like a quiet place is just like my happy place, and like being able to like come home to my house that's just like there's dogs barking and lawns being mowed, and that's like the extent of like my noise. I mean, that's like the first thing that comes to mind. It feels like a family.
Courtney Benkin moved here from Maryland in 2022 with her partner. She's the executive director of the Slate Valley Trails, and she also helped organize the fifth season ride. She actually met James at his former bike shop in Maryland, and she visited Pulteney after he moved here. She instantly fell in love with the town. Here's Courtney.
It's a really special place. There's something about Pulteney. I don't really quite know how to explain it, but people are super welcoming here. It's just so community-centric. One reason we loved it here was we knew if you ever needed something, and you might not agree with your neighbor, you know what I mean? You might not have share the same values or morals, but you know your neighbor would get you out of a situation if you needed help. You know, like they're just, everybody is so super helpful and kind and wants to see you succeed. And it's a small town, so you really can't, you have to be kind to one another. Like, coming from Maryland, you don't have to have a relationship with your neighbor. You could, but it's not necessary. And here, you really have to, because you're going to see these people everywhere.
Would you describe Pulteney as resilient?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Pulteney's like probably its biggest economic driver, and something it would just cherish so much was their college. And when that closed, the town rallied. You know, they were like, what are we going to do? And they all agreed that outdoor recreation was something that they really wanted to support, you know? And I think that's another really beautiful part of this area is there's just so much to do outside, like whether it's on the lake or on the trails, you know, fishing or hunting or skiing. There's endless opportunities if you love being outside.
Pulteney feels kind of like an underdog, but in a really good way. Underdogs are great. And do you agree with that?
Totally. I mean, I haven't been in Vermont super long, but I've toured around enough to know, like, it's not Stowe, it's not Burlington, it's this tiny little community, but yeah, they work together, and everyone that is here cares very much about this area. So totally. It's really cool to see people come together, especially after the closing of Green Mountain College, and make sure that they are doing everything they could to, like, make this town a place that they want people to come and move and live. It's awesome. Like, I'm here because of that reason. Like, I came here, and people could look at my husband and I and be like, oh, you're out of towners. You're not, there's generations of people here, but they want young people to move here and they care. So when you do come, they're very welcoming. It's awesome.
I caught up with James after the race. We sat in his yurt talking about the town where his grandmother was born. I asked him to describe Pulteney, and here's what he said.
I think first and foremost, it's beautiful, but it's not like a Dorset beauty where all the houses are white and all the lawns are manicured. But the natural environment around here is basically unspoiled. There's like this raw beauty that I think is more beautiful than like a super polished beauty. I think that beauty just really, there are certainly other communities in Vermont that have that, but sort of this unburnished diamond in the rough's a stupid phrase, but it has that sort of thing going on, I think. And then I think it's tough. The people are tough in a good way. Like, they're resilient, they're tough. So I think it's a very tough place. And you sort of see that in people's faces and sort of how time has treated them.
What do you think your grandmother would think if she saw Pulteney now, or kind of what's happened, or maybe this community that's resilient and comes together?
I think that she would be incredibly happy. I think that when she was sort of getting toward the end of her life, everything that she knew about Pulteney was passing along with her passing. So all of her friends were also aging out, or whatever you want to call that. They were getting ready to die. And her community that she knew was falling apart. But to see the next generation, or in my case, two generations removed, come back and breathe life into it, I think that she would be thrilled. I think she always knew that I wanted to move here and that I wanted to make it sort of a permanent way of life. And I get why it wasn't tenable for her, but her heart was always here. And I think to see sort of her lineage, whatever you want to call it, go on here, she'd be tickled.
Thanks for listening to Happy Vermont. You can find more stories, podcast episodes, and event listings on my website, happyvermont.com. To help support Happy Vermont, you can leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or sign up to become a Patreon member. You can also email me at hello@happyvermont.com. Thanks again for listening. Take care and talk to you soon.